Hi, we're back here on the Carolina Outdoors. What would you do if you didn't know about the pandemic? You were amongst friends or coworkers, associates, but you didn't know how life was with quarantines, stay-at-home orders, mask constantly. We're going to talk a little bit about a group of people who were tucked away, away from society, on a research team in Hawaii on this segment of the Carolina Outdoors. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Bartee, sitting alongside Wes Lawson, both of us from Jesse Brown's, and we're going to talk about this group of people and what they learned when they came out of their research pod.
Well, Bill, the first thing they learned was how to pronounce the wildlife sanctuary. Papahanaumokuakeakee, there you go, say that 10 times fast, Marine National Monument. So they were in the Cure Atoll. Where is that? That is 100 miles to the east of the International Dateline. Look at the map of the Pacific Ocean, look to the middle and go north. There you are, the middle of nowhere. Cure Atoll is important really because of two things. One, people don't live there, except for these researchers, for 8 months out of the year. But the other is it is a huge migratory bird sanctuary. So this group of researchers, a small team from the University of Hawaii, went out there. They thought they were going to leave in March. They ended up going in February to relieve a crew early. Here's the deal, though. There's no cell phone service. There's no television service. There's no satellite TV. And they shared an email account. Now, I don't really understand why this far into the 21st century they're sharing an email account, but they only had periodic access to email. So come March, April, May, they had heard about a virus from some friends and some family, but they assumed that it would go away. No big deal. There's always a virus. So they were probably the last people on Earth to really understand what was going on, except for probably a few people in a gulag somewhere. So they're out in the middle of nowhere. The closest place to them, other than the water, was Midway Island. So, you know, you've heard of Midway. Midway is to the west, but is an hour behind because of the dateline. Very confusing stuff. So that's where they were. And they just got back just days ago.
So, Wes, I've got a couple of questions in regards to this. If you're just joining us here on the Carolina Outdoors, we're talking about a group of researchers who didn't know about the quarantine or how life was with the pandemic going on. First off, in media reports, do you know what their reaction was as they learned about all that has been going on over these last several months? And secondly, do you know what they were researching?
Well, I'm sure their reaction was something to the effect of, we left y'all this perfectly nice place. Now we can't have nice things. I think it was honest shock. So what were they doing on the island? So they were tracking migratory birds, their flight patterns, their nesting habits, but also cleaning because, you know, birds create a lot of waste. So this island is tremendously important for the flight patterns of some of these birds. Some of these birds actually are not even seabirds. They're learning how other birds, all these species, are adapting to either a change in climate or a change in access to food. So they're flying farther to find new resources or to nest elsewhere. So in order for them to really study that, they have to keep Cure Atoll, Green Island, have to keep it reasonably clean. Now, they're not out there with dustpans and hoovers, but they are trying to keep it to the point where it will be a safe place for more birds, but also to see what's happening with some of the sea life around that area. So I would imagine it could be some pretty long days. There's not a lot of shade there, and they don't have Jesse Brown's to outfit them for that kind of stuff.
In that regard, this is a reminder that Jesse Brown's is outfitting people for the outdoors or even traveling to research pods in Hawaii. We're also outfitting people for gifts. If your loved one is maybe on a research team in Hawaii, or maybe they just like fly fishing, hiking, or anything else in the outdoors, remember, Jesse Brown's not only outfits them, Jesse Brown's outfits the people who buy gifts for them. So this holiday season, remember to stop by Jesse Brown's, located in the Sharon Corners Shopping Center in the South Park Shopping District of Charlotte, or everyone else who's not local can head on over to jessebrowns.com. We're shipping to the 48 states and sometimes beyond. So check us out at jessebrowns.com. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about, Wes, and I guess you told me the answer, but there are tons of research pods on the islands of Hawaii. And one of them is in regards to studying people psychologically, but also from a research standpoint in preparation for space travel, and specifically to travel to Mars, where they do tuck people away from loved ones, and try to reenact everything but the weightlessness, that the lack of gravity that's unable to be researched, obviously. But because of the volcanic ash of those Hawaiian islands, in many places, it mimics the surface of Mars. And therefore, there are several ongoing studies in preparation for us to send astronauts to that planet. Any relation to a quarantine or to a pandemic?
You know, it is similar. One thing was, we don't really know, kind of like when astronauts first went to the moon, they had to quarantine when they came back. We talked about this several months ago. Oh. You know, when those first Apollo crews came back, they quarantined because we weren't sure if they might bring back some sort of weird bacteria, a virus, little green men. We just didn't know. And so we have a lot more information about Mars now than we did about the moon during the Apollo missions and Gemini before that. But we still, you know, science is ever evolving. So there is concern about that. There's also that psychological preparation you talked about. You know, they're going to be in a very small space for a very long time. And people's psyche changes and their habits change that way. And, you know, you're now more dependent upon yourself and others. So you become very dependent and interdependent. So they've got to work on all those kind of skills. It's a little bit different than when the office gets together for a Myers-Briggs personality type indicator. This is much deeper. But then also, that volcanic surface does look a little foreign. It behaves a little bit differently. So they are learning how to traverse that, how to use their equipment. Even the hand tools that they will take will interact with the surface of, in this case, Hawaii, and the surface of Mars differently than traditional tools. Because again, these aren't, Black and Decker hand tools you get at Lowe's or Home Depot or the local hardware store. So it's all of that kind of stuff. But just like our friends who were at Cure Island on that atoll, these astronauts, these future heroes of Earth, are having to think about what are we leaving behind and what might we bring back. And they'll probably have, that same kind of weird shared email address. So they might be the last folks to deal with the pandemic as well.
Well, one similarity that they both had in the other research teams, they are locked away and out of touch in a small space because they keep them locked down just as they would in a pod on Mars or wherever they may be, with restricted communication and that sort of thing. So we're going to transition a little bit. If you're just joining us, the voice of that man over there, Wes Lawson, I'm Bill Barty. This is the Carolina Outdoors that's available early on a Saturday morning as WBT blasts us up and down the Eastern Seaboard on WBT Radio, as well as available under Carolina Outdoors as a podcast. If you like the Carolina Outdoors and the subject matter that we cover here, we urge you to rate and review us. It helps other people listen to the things that we're talking about. You can also visit us at jessebrowns.com, hit the podcast, and listen that way, past shows, including this one. So without further ado, we're going to transition a little bit from talking about research studies in Hawaii to rock art pictures. And this has just popped up in the news. And here comes another place of challenging pronunciation. Serrania La Lindosa, which is in modern-day Colombia, just recently, this has been published. Actually, this was discovered in 2016. Locals knew about this. But here in 2020, pictures painted on the rock walls in this part of Colombia showing human figures. Geometric shapes, and hunting scenes, as well as animals such as deer, alligators, bats, monkeys, turtles, serpents, and porcupines. The thousands of these rock art pictures depicting these huge Ice Age creatures, such as mastodons, have been revealed by researchers, again, in the Amazon rainforest. The paintings were probably made around 12,000 to 13,000 years ago, according to a press release from researchers at Britain's University of Exeter. The paintings are set over three different rock shelters, with the largest, which is home to 12 panels and thousands of individual pictographs. There's the word I was listening. This goes back to the oldest rock paintings in the world, and it also, researchers are using it to talk about how the Amazon was changing from a patchwork of savannas, tropical forests, and thorny scrub into the broadleaf tropical forest we know today, according to the press release that was released. And the author of this particular article. So anyway, I know there's a lot of deer hunting going out. Duck hunters are making their way across the flyways, wherever that's going on. But this is in the news as well, and it lends itself to how the Amazon may have been 13,000 years ago.
You know, every so often people say, you know, what else is there to explore? We've found it all, we know it all, and here we are finding more that we don't know about. And it really changes how we understand our modern history here, or in this case, in South America. It wasn't that long ago in elementary, middle school, and high school, you learned about basically the North American Native Americans, and then it was Aztecs, Mayans, and the Incans, and that was it. And we've learned that there were a whole lot of other groups that were there before those that helped, you know, create these, what in some cases were very large civilizations. And Bill, what you're talking about changes all of that a bit more as well, and helps us really understand how much change, both naturally and man-influenced, has happened in the Amazon, which is still an incredibly diverse tropical area. I mean, the amount of water that comes out of there, you know, we refer to it as the lungs of the earth for all the carbon dioxide that is absorbed there, but it hasn't always been this way. And we're learning more really every day and every year about just how much change it has taken place naturally, but then also because of ancient peoples and modern people. It really is pretty fascinating. You know, exploration isn't over just because it's the 21st century.
I'm still trying to do attribution for the man who wrote this article. I'm going to say his name was Guy with CNN, but this is what I learned from it. And we're talking about on the Carolina Outdoors, the ancient people of the Amazon and the paintings that they painted as they were living alongside megafauna and their observation of megafauna and how they did the paintings, which Guy from CNN lists the artist would have used fire to exfoliate the rock, similar to washing your face with exfoliation creams and that sort of thing. So they used fire to exfoliate the rock and make the surfaces flat on which they could paint. So while the paintings are exposed to the elements, they are protected by overhanging rocks in this part of Colombia, which means these, for 12 to 13,000 years, have remained in better condition than other rock art found in the same region. Some of these rock paintings were painted so high up that special ladders were crafted from forest resources in order to reach these top-pillared paintings to create them. All, again, according to the press release from Britain's University of Exeter. All of that's in there. Quote, it is likely art was a powerful part of culture and a way for people to connect socially. The pictures show how people would have lived amongst giant, now extinct, animals which they hunted, unquote. So essentially, this was like their TV or changing billboard, if you will.
Yeah, I was thinking it kind of sounds like jungle graffiti. You're getting up on these ladders, probably under the cover of darkness. Someone's mom didn't know they were out there doing it. Don't let dad know. But, you know, they had to make all that. They have to make their own paints. They're fashioning brushes out of different materials, including some animal pelts and feathers. Mm-hmm. And then all that work to prepare the surface, that's pretty incredible. You know, that's not going out and buying a how-to DVD or pulling up a Pinterest page. That was stuff that they were figuring out on their own and passing down that knowledge. And the fact that artwork has survived for this long in what is a very damp environment that has changed tremendously is pretty fascinating. It really, I think, says a lot to their preparation and probably a little bit of good fortune on the part of the University of Exeter. But, you know, I go back to my earlier point. People seem to think that exploration, that those days are over. You know, Livingston and Stanley have done it all. But there's so much out there that we aren't aware of. You know, this in Colombia, the white city in Honduras that changes our understanding of the Mayan and even some of the Aztec cultures, it really is pretty wild what archaeologists are doing now and what technology has allowed them to do, how to find these places, how to uncover delicately all of this artwork, much like what we've seen in the Levant and in Egypt with Egyptologists and that kind of thing. So maybe the next Indiana Jones kind of thing will be more about this sort of stuff and get more people interested in learning about how much the world has changed and continues to change.
So speaking of that, as we transition, the voice right there, Wes Lawson, I'm Bill Barty, and people changing and things changing, that's been going on all year this year, including people pursuing their love or maybe their interest or their curiosity in being outdoors. So we at Jesse Brown's have outfitted people throughout the spring, throughout the summer, throughout the fall for adventures and exploration and pursuits in the Carolina outdoors. But something's different now. And Wes, we should share for people who may not know or may need a reminder from others is what wintertime pursuits mean. And I mentioned duck hunters. And of course, we sell waders. We sell outerwear. We sell things like that for people who are sitting in a duck blind where it may be colder or wet. We also outfit for people who are full on active moving, whether it be someone who is hiking in to that hard to reach trout stream, or maybe they're just hiking for release, for exercise, for adventure, and seeing things that other people don't. Now, through spring, summer, and even fall here in the Carolinas, you can get away with a light raincoat and a pair of shorts. But now that it's wintertime and winter's going to be with us for a little bit longer, this is our time to remind people to wear and dress appropriately, but to wear and dress in layers. And Wes, really, the big reason to wear layers is so that you can be comfortable when you are still dry and comfortable, whether the dryness be from precipitation or from sweat, but also to be comfortable when you are moving and your body is heating up and you're perspiring, to be able to peel out of some of those clothes too. So shall we talk about the layering system?
Yep, layering really is very important. You, even on these kind of milder temperate days we've had recently, and part of that is, like you said, it's to regulate our body temperature, but also our body moisture. So, you know, these base layers now are, for the most part, either high-quality merinos that don't itch, that don't hold odor, which is great because that's the closest to your skin, but they also help regulate temperature. Or maybe it's a modern bamboo viscous, or it's a modern poly blend that's been treated with a wash so it also doesn't hold odor like they used to. These are there to trap that initial body heat with a deep front zip so that if you are layered up with your other layers and you're active, that base layer, if I can crack that zipper down, I can release a little bit more of that moisture out into the next layers and I can stay drier, which means I stay warmer. So I have my base layer, I have a midweight, which is like an active top. It might have kind of a waffle weave pattern to help circulate all that heat and all that moisture, much like your home's HVAC system. That's so that when I am moving around, I don't get real clammy, especially in the face, and start feeling like I'm going to just collapse, because I'm going to have a synthetic down or a down jacket over top, maybe a windbreaker or a rain shell to help trap all that warmth in. But I want to have all my ventilation open, or at least cracked a little bit, so I don't overheat. Because now what happens is, if it's cold outside and I'm keeping all that moisture against my skin, bad things are going to happen. Remember, your mom used to tell you when you went outside in the cold to put a hat on, or you're going to get the flu or pneumonia, or you're going to get sick. Well, it's kind of that same idea. There is some truth that you might not feel well. You're not going to get pneumonia necessarily, but you could. All of this is important because it helps keep you healthy and safe. Because if that happens and then something else happens, like let's say you roll an ankle and now you're going to be slower leaving the trail, you're putting yourself at even more risk if you are cold and wet than if you were just cold or if you were just with a rolled ankle. So it's all there for a reason. It works as a system. And this is one of those things that we, I think, are really good at helping answer questions for. But also, how do they fit? Come try it on. This is what it should look and feel like. And you can't do that if you don't get to try it. And we're here for that. And if we're not here when you come to the store, you can shop jessebrowns.com. But we do want to help you figure out what you need for that pursuit and what's right for other adventures you have coming up. When can I use this really? How will my loved one wear this, he or she? So we're here for all that kind of stuff because that system has to work hand in glove.
It's all about being comfortable. We're going to come back and wrap up this edition of the Carolina Outdoors right after this.